This is VOA News. I'm Joe Ramsey. Israel has struck back at Iran, according to three Reuters sources. Iranian state media reported early on Friday its forces had destroyed drones days after Iran fired hundreds of drones into Israel in retaliation for the attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus in Syria. Reuters correspondent Lila Davies reports.
Iran's foreign minister Hossein Amir Abdullahian on Thursday had told the United Nations Security Council that Israel should refrain from any action.
The Islamic Republic of Iran will not hesitate a bit to assert its inherent right to give a decisive and proper response to it to make the regime regret its actions.
Israel had warned it was going to retaliate against Iran's April 13th missile and drone attack. Numerous countries had earned restraint, concerned that any retaliation could spark a broader conflict in the region. Iran's president has said the country would deliver a severe response to any attack on its territory.
Reuters correspondent Lila Davies. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken on Friday said the U.S. was committed to Israel's security, adding, when asked about Israel's strikes on Iran, the U.S. has not been involved in any offensive operation.
Our focus has been on, of course, making sure that Israel can effectively defend itself, but also de-escalating tensions, avoiding conflict, and that remains our focus.
NATO allies on Friday agreed to provide Kyiv with additional air defense systems, NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg said after a special meeting of allied defense ministers with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who had asked for the meeting as his country is facing a shortage of ammunition. This is VOA News. Ukraine said it shot down a Russian strategic bomber on Friday. Reuters correspondent Rachel Judah has more.
At least eight people, including two children, were killed early on Friday when missiles rained down over the eastern city and the surrounding central Dnipropetrovsk region. In retaliation, Kyiv says it shot down a Russian strategic bomber. It says took part in the long-range strike. This is the first time during the two-year-long war that Ukraine has downed a bomber within Russia's borders. While the Russian Defense Ministry confirmed the crash, it said it was due to a technical malfunction.
Reuters correspondent Rachel Judah. Lawyers in Donald Trump's criminal trial are expected on Friday to wrap up the process of selecting a jury that will, for the first time in U.S. history, determine whether a former president is guilty of breaking the law. With the 12-member jury already chosen, prosecutors and defense lawyers need six alternates for the trial, which is expected to run through May. Opening statements could start on Monday. Two jurors have already been removed from the case. Justice Juan Merchan dismissed one juror on Thursday, who said she felt intimidated after friends and relatives figured out she had been chosen for the trial. Kenya's military chief, General Francis Ogala, died in a helicopter crash on Thursday along with nine others. Reuters correspondent Devi Rajaram reports.
They were on a helicopter which President William Ruto said crashed right after takeoff after visiting troops fighting cattle rustling. Two soldiers survived the crash and were in hospital, according to Ruto.
Our motherland has lost one of her most valiant generals. We have also lost gallant officers.
Ogola was appointed by Ruto last year to lead the military. At the time, the president accused him of involvement in a plot to overturn the 2022 presidential election results. But he said Ogola was still the most qualified person for the job.
Reuters correspondent Devi Rajaram. Five Japanese auto workers on Friday narrowly escaped an attack by a suicide bomber who detonated his explosive-laden vest near their vehicle in Pakistan's southern port city of Karachi. The local police chief said the van carrying the Japanese nationals was heading to an industrial area where they worked at Pakistan Suzuki Motors, where it was targeted. He said guards escorting the Japanese workers returned fire after coming attack, and all the Japanese who were the target of the attack were safe. I'm Joe Ramsey, VOA News.
is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We were able to show that in the year 2022, there are 2.6 million healthcare-associated infections across those seven countries. Overall, those led to 275,000 deaths.
That was Catherine Nightengale, WaterAid's Global Director of International Affairs. Details coming up. Also, Kenya is mourning the death of its defense chief, and Zimbabwe has granted amnesty to 4,000 inmates. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Kenya began 3 days of mourning today after its defense chief and nine other military personnel were killed in a helicopter crash yesterday, the latest accident to blight the nation's military. VOA's Nairobi Bureau Chief Mariama Diallo is standing by to brief us on this tragic matter. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Mariama.
Thank you very much, Yehias, for having me tonight.
So talk to us briefly about General Francis Omondi Ogola, the chief of the Kenya Defense Forces. What happened?
Well, this is, as you announced, it's just a country in mourning right now. General Francis Ogola, the Kenya's chief of defense forces, was in a helicopter crash yesterday, basically, and it says that the helicopter crashed very soon after takeoff. And he's among about maybe 11 people, other military personnel who died. So that was announced yesterday, obviously, by President Ruto, who seems very, you know, a little bit shaken, just to say the least. He's the chief, he's Kenya's chief of defense forces, of course. But he, after that, I think today he has visited with family. He, not just him, there are also other, officials, former President Uhuru Kenyatta, who had talked about this crash. You also have Raila Odinga, the former, the opposition leader, who has visited the family. So, yes, it's a tragic moment for the Defense Forces team fraternity, as President Ruto had talked about it. And he said today he actually, while meeting with his family, he really gave him a lot of praises, talked about the fact that he is the one he's actually one of his best cabinet secretaries that he appointed, not cabinet secretaries, one of the best appointments he's made a year and a half ago. He talks about his leadership. He talks about how he thought that, him staying in his post will make a big, big difference and that he would transform the military. He also talked about the fact that because they had General Ogola, the country has not seen terrorist attacks recently. So a lot is going on, but definitely it can be felt all over the country. I have newspapers in front of me. If it was on radio, I will show it to you on TV, but he was the front page of almost every newspaper today and yesterday.
And Mariama, I understand the nation will be observing 3 days of mourning starting today with the national flag flying at half staff across the country and at Kenyan missions abroad, right?
Correct. They talk about definitely that because of his wishes, he wanted to be buried less than within 72 hours. So they're going to try to actually do that. So he's supposed to be buried on Sunday. But I think tomorrow, according to the defense secretary, they talked about the fact that he will benefit basically from a full ceremony, military ceremony, and they'll also have a 19-gun salute for him. I'm sure it will be attended probably by most, a lot of officials and maybe some people, some ordinary Kenyans, but also his family and friends. He was only 61, also. That's another thing. Yeah. And one more thing just to add before I let you go is that he was actually supposed to celebrate, help celebrate his father's 100 years old, over the weekend or I think next week. So it's a very tragic story, as President Ruto talked about it and others.
Mariama, President Ruto said the Air Force has dispatched an investigation team to establish the cause of the crash that involved a Huey helicopter. But Kenyan media is reporting that this was the fifth armed forces chopper crash in 12 months, with claims that the country's military aircraft is aging and poorly maintained.
Well, given that this has just happened, there are a lot of reports out there, and it's hard to verify this early. But I'm sure as the day goes, given that the Ruto's government has dispatched a team there to investigate what happened, as the day goes, they'll probably figure out what were the reasons. And from that, also, whatever the local media is reporting, trying to see how much of it is true versus how much of it is false. But for now, at this moment, I think it's very, very early to kind of figure out which side is telling the truth. But I am sure once we get that information, we'll make sure to get it to you. And hopefully we will get more information in the next few days, given that he will be buried on Sunday. And he was not the only one in the plane, in the helicopter. There were also other military personnel in that crash. And all of those families are also making their own funeral arrangements and things like that.
Mariama Diallo, VOA Nairobi Chief, thank you for your input.
Thank you very much, Yehias, for having me on the show today. It's a sad day for Kenya, for sure.
It is a sad day, and as we just reported, the helicopter that General Francis Ogola and his colleagues were in went down shortly after takeoff yesterday in a remote forested area of northwestern Kenya. President William Ruto announced the deaths that evening, saying a distinguished four-star general has fallen in the course of duty and service to the country. Journalist Ruben Chama today spoke with people in Nairobi to hear their reaction to the crash. Maggie Otieno, a Kenyan visual artist and sculptor, called for unity in the face of the losses.
So where we are at a nation now, I think it's such a tremendous loss, I must say. For me, it's just prayers for the nation, because these military guys, there were people who we have known. And some of them, sometimes even as much as they are far from you as a mwananchi, you know that these are people who make great decisions for the security of the nation. So mine is just to condole with the family members and to pray for the nation. We should not speculate, because Kenyans, we like speculating a lot and trying to see, was there something sinister? But I think it's not time for that. It's time to just pray for the nation.
Oliver Odhiambo, an IT specialist, called the crash a tragedy.
The first thing that came into mind was like, this is the next person to the president. To hear that news, it was kind of a tragic event. It's a dark day for this country. I would say I'm quite sorry for the loss of the family, for the country. I wish things would have gone otherwise, but we're still together.
Businesswoman Sarah Nkata said the country needs to support the families of those who died.
It was shocking and saddening for the nation. But it's something we have to come to terms with. Yeah, we should support the family in terms of mourning, praying for them to find peace and comfort, because it's not easy to lose a loved one. Security in Kenya has been a challenge in the past. So my message is to really support and comfort their families until they're laid to rest. So we should mourn, pray for the families, the friends, and whoever they were working with, the colleagues, because it's not easy to let go. But we should pray for God to give us the spirit of letting go.
Javan Olik, a security guard at Mount Kenya University, said more needs to be done to prevent such accidents. Israel had vowed it would respond to Iran's attack last week when Iran fired more than 300 drones and missiles at Israel in its first ever direct military assault on the country. That attack came after Iran blamed Israel for an airstrike on its embassy in Syria, in which several top military commanders died. Now Israel has carried out a limited military strike against Iran. We have on the line VOA's Patsy Wida-Kuswara, our White House bureau chief, to brief us on the U.S. response to the latest developments. Welcome to Africa News Tonight, Patsy.
Happy to be here.
So did the Israelis inform the U.S. and did Washington take part in the strikes?
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken today in Italy on the sidelines of the G7 meetings, he declined to confirm those reports that Washington was notified of these Israeli plans to counterstrike. But Italian Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani, who chaired the G7 meetings, said the U.S. had told its G7 partners it did receive last-minute information from Israel about its actions. However, Blinken did stress that the U.S. was not involved in any offensive operations. And aides have been telling us now that Biden had himself personally told Netanyahu when they spoke last time over the phone that the U.S. will not participate in any Israeli counterstrikes against Iran and really urged to de-escalate. So that's where we are right now.
So what are the prospects of a potential escalation in the dispute?
Well, the analysts that I've spoken to say that Israel's limited counterattack, right, these drone attacks, we've not seen any reports of casualties, for example, and also Iran's muted response, Iran's downplaying the attack, it signals that both sides are willing to avoid further escalation, at least for now. However, the risks are higher than ever before. What we have here is now the Iran-Israel shadow conflict turning into this low-grade open war between the two countries, and any miscalculation can be fatal for the region that's already inflamed, already angered by Israel's actions against Hamas, which is an Iranian proxy in Gaza.
And lastly, Patsy, let's talk about consequences for Iran and for Israel, especially as U.S. House of Representatives is set to vote on a $26 billion aid package for Israel.
So the consequences for Iran, the U.S. already said that they are working on a comprehensive response with its partners, including the G7, packages including sanctions and also strengthening air missile defense systems in the region. For Israel, that's a little bit complicated. I mean, we know that Israel and Hamas right now are negotiating in Qatar to reach a deal on the ceasefire for hostage release. Now, we don't know how these latest tensions with Iran, how will that impact the dynamic for Israel and Hamas in those negotiations. In relation to U.S. aid, as you mentioned before, the House of Representatives is set tomorrow, actually, to vote on the $26 billion military aid for Israel. That's actually really interesting because this, in this case, President Biden has been receiving a lot of pressure from progressives in his own party to limit U.S. weapons to Israel. They don't want U.S. weapons to be used by Israel to violate human rights potentially in Gaza. But as this aid package is set to be voted on, this tensions on Iran, tensions with Iran could actually give President Biden a little bit of breathing room, and he could tell the progressive Democrats in his party to say that, and he could say that, look, you know, Israel is under a lot of pressure, under a lot of threat, so it's time that we give them the support that they need.
VOA's Patsy Widakaswara, White House Bureau Chief, thank you for your input.
My pleasure.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. International Monetary Fund Chief Kristalina Georgieva is drawing attention to the suffering in Yemen and Sudan, both plagued by civil wars and often overshadowed by conflicts in other countries. During a news conference yesterday at the annual IMF World Bank meeting in Washington, she said, "When we have these highly visible wars like the one in Ukraine, like the one in Gaza, they overshadow the pain and suffering that is happening in other places." Georgieva also noted the strength of economies in the Middle East despite the impact of Israel's war against Hamas in Gaza and the attacks of Yemen's Houthi rebels on maritime traffic in the Red Sea. Georgieva again urged fiscal restraint so governments can be ready for the next big crisis. The IMF has been encouraging governments to increase their tax revenues to invest in the fight against global warming. On Tuesday, the IMF updated its annual report on the state of the world economy and said it anticipates global growth of 3.2% this year, up slightly from its previous estimate. Catherine Knight Engel, WaterAid's Global Director of International Affairs, attended the IMF World Bank meeting in Washington we were just talking about. She tells VOA's Carol Van Dam she presented data to world leaders, bankers, and donors on the impact of infections at health facilities in Africa and how billions of dollars could be saved if countries invested in providing clean water.
We looked at Ethiopia, Ghana, Mali, Malawi, Nigeria, Zambia, and Uganda. And these are really typical countries. They range, you know, across Africa, but as examples in terms of size, but they're pretty typical of the fact that in a lot of parts, there are not water and sanitation facilities in the health centers that people might be going to when they're sick, when they're going to give birth, when they're going to get vaccinated, when they're going to look after their children or get their children seen to. And what that means is that they can go into these facilities and acquire an infection, and then that can have a knock-on impact. It can mean that they get very sick, it means they're off work, it might mean that they die tragically, and all of that has a huge, not only emotional cost to the people who lose loved ones, but also a huge economic cost if people can't work and they can't bring that income in. So we worked to kind of calculate the cost of those healthcare acquired infections, and in doing so, we were able to show that in the year 2022, there are 2.6 million healthcare-associated infections across those seven countries. Overall, those led to 275,000 deaths. And those numbers are likely to be an underestimate because they only really focus on people who went into hospital. And at WaterAid, we know that water and sanitation and hygiene are one of the main ways you can stop infections happening. So if we can get kind of the measures in place, including really good wash in those facilities, water, sanitation and hygiene, we call it WASH, then we know we can reduce this. And we calculated that we could reduce it by half. And we calculated that actually we could be investing, you know, maybe just $1 per person per capita in each country, and you'd be able to get that water and sanitation into the health facilities and really, really cut this down by half.
That was your message. You wanted basically the bankers and financiers who were attending these meetings to say, look, this is so obvious and we can cut the costs in half and save lives in the making if you just give us this money, and then we'll build these water facilities in the hospitals and the health facilities. Right.
We weren't even asking for it for us necessarily. We were saying to the finance ministers in those governments, and in fact, we were very pleased to have with us the Minister of Finance from Malawi, who joined us for our event and talked to us about how useful it is to have data that demonstrates that you can make this investment and you can sort of save money as a result.
This data is being presented not just to the bankers and the big executives and the World Bank and IMF folks. It's going back to the countries in Africa, their leaders saying, look, just do this. You'll save so much in costs and in lives.
That's right. That's exactly it. We're trying to help give them the tools to make the case inside their governments. And we're, you know, talking to finance ministers, also presenting. It's just launched, Carol. So we're really hoping to present it, you know, ongoing in the next few weeks, so that these national governments and their ministries of health and ministries of water and sanitation can see just how important this investment is.
That was Catherine Knight Engel, WaterAid's Global Director of International Affairs, speaking with VOA's Carol Van Dam from the IMF World Bank Spring Meeting in Washington. An air strike on a village in Nigeria's northwestern Zamfara state killed at least 33 people last week after a military operation targeting armed kidnapping gangs and their hideouts. The incident on April 10th is the latest in a pattern of deadly aerial assaults by the military that have killed civilians and were the subject of a special Reuters news report last year. The military said yesterday the airstrikes had eliminated armed gangs in several locations in Zamfara, including the Maradun local government area. But Lawali Ango, the traditional head of Dogon Daji village in Maradun, told Reuters there were no bandits in his mainly Muslim area. He says after a bomb strike, he saw people dead and trapped in collapsed buildings. Nigerian Defense Headquarters denies civilians were killed or targeted. And now, time for sports. I have in studio with me our VOA sports analyst, intern Omolemo Kale. And he's here to fill us about the Basketball Africa League returning to the second round of play and other sports developments. Omolemo earlier talked with Lebesa Selepe of the Cape Town Tigers about the future of the BAL.
Outside of the NBA, I think the BAL is the most viewed league in the world. And well done to the BAL for getting it there in season four. Shout out to the NBA, shout out to NBA Africa, shout out to FIBA, because a combination and collaboration of this magnitude has not been done before. You know, people that came to Pretoria to watch the Kalahari Conference, it's the first time the BAL ever came to South Africa. And for three, four nights, it was sold out, you know, and that just shows the love for the game that we have in South Africa and on this continent. I mean, the energy, the production, it almost feels like an NBA game. People have watched basketball, said that they've never seen anything like the BAL because it really is just that big.
So, Omolemo, what do you think? What can we expect from the BAL now?
Yes, up and coming, the BAL is having their Nile Conference coming up. It's going to be a pretty action-packed event. I would prefer you keep an eye out for specific teams. Unfortunately, for Lebese Selepe that I spoke to recently, his team is not part of that conference. But there is the Bangi SC basketball team that I believe is a good look to look out for in that conference.
With your permission, let's move on to football. What were the results of the quarterfinals for the Champions League this week?
Yes. This week was a very action-packed week for football indeed for the Champions League. For the game, Arsenal and Bayern Munich. Arsenal had a very, very good strong start in the beginning. And they unfortunately did not come up with the win. They lost 1-0 in an overall of a 3-2 aggregate. They had seemingly well-possessed game for Bayern Munich and Arsenal. Bayern Munich had 52 possession. Arsenal had 48 possession. Arsenal had 8 shots on goal, and Bayern Munich had 15. But unfortunately, Bayern Munich clinched the win with just one win over Bayern Munich. Now, for another game that was also very action-packed, Manchester City versus Real Madrid. Mm-hmm. This game actually broke my heart because I am a Manchester City fan, and the entire game was a complete roller coaster. They tied the game 1-1, and they went to extra time and still drew, and they went on to penalty shootouts. Now, Luka Modric was the first person to take the kick, and he missed his kick, which put Man City up 1-0. And Man City had missed two back-to-back shots, which then put Real Madrid up 2-1. And because both teams scored all of their shots thereafter, Real Madrid, one by one, making it a 4-3 penalty shootout.
And lastly, some drama over in the NBA. What's been going on as the playoffs have started?
Yes, indeed. In the NBA, a player by the name of Jonte Porter from the Toronto Raptors received a lifetime ban for gambling. Jonte Porter had placed something around 13 bets on NBA games with a different person's online betting account, winning somewhere around $22,000. Jonte had a very particular way of gambling. For example, he would tell a person that knew of an NBA player, and he would address that he had poor health conditions, and so he would play bad, and unfortunately enough, he's gone for a lifetime now.
So, sports analyst intern Omolemo, thank you for your input, and with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer David Van Dee and our engineer Cedric Franklin, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.